I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Welcome to Vega's World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. A lot of fun stuff to talk about this week. We have news about the possible rumored cast for the Miami Vice reboot movie. We also got a biopic for a famous professional wrestler that is in the works by a surprising producer. We have a Spawn holiday special coming out for comic books, which is the added person in this is fucking weird. I'm not even gonna lie. I can't even sugarcoat it. It's just bizarre. But hey, all right, we'll run with it. A lot of other stuff, but let's get into what I want to talk about right now, and that's Alien Earth. The season finale has come and gone, and it felt more like a penultimate episode. Like, nothing about it screamed the end of the season. A lot of stupid mistakes just kept piling on towards the end of this. You know, I started out this show hopeful. Like, we had a lot of interesting ideas. Cool, the synthetic children, the hybrid children of from Synth's body. We have five major corporations controlling the world as a whole. We have one who's run by a really young trillionaire who, you know, is very cavalier, and his name's Cavalier, so and just has a disregard for all of that shenanigans. And towards the middle of it, Morrow, the cyborg in this show, seemed like he would be a compelling antagonist for the characters of the show. And, man, we just took a fucking nosedive with that. I'm sorry to keep cursing and using the F word, but, like, that's what happened. It was so stupid. Like, you're on this private island that you have, and you have this lab that you can work on stuff. And, like, you have this area so you can work on your synth children with, you know, I guess outside eyes or any espionage going on, possibly. It's highly secure and all of that, but you do not have a kill switch for any possible, you know, malfunctions or, oh, this child's a little bit too temperamental, we got to shut it down because they have the strength of, like, 10 men who are going to, like, rip my face off. Let's not do that. And they put him in a cell, and off the bat, they were like, this isn't going to hold him. It wasn't designed for them, but you put it in anyway because you're hoping that the fact that they're kids and have the mentality of children, that they'll listen to you, and they'll just take your authority for what it is. And then, you know, fucking Wendy here is able to control, manipulate objects from across the room. She's able to stop a full-blown synth dead in its tracks. Is she an X-Man? What is going on here? Is she a mutant from the Marvel Universe? Why does she have all these capabilities? Why do none of the other synths show this possibility? Are they, you know, was that just, they don't explain any of that shit. And I wish they would have. I wish they'd give us some context of why she's able to do this or why none of the other kids try to do it. Or if they even have the capabilities to do it, maybe because she's the first, she's a little bit more special, quote unquote. So she's got a little bit more to do with that. I have no idea. I'm also perplexed by the fact that this corporation would take the time to bury the children instead of cremate them, because I don't see Boy Cavalier as being the sentimental type. Now, maybe the lady on the island whose name escapes me, like, the lady who's, like, working close with the children and, like, their psychology, maybe she was the one who protested and, like, wanted that to be a thing. I have no idea. Again, they don't leave it explained, but, like, I feel like as a corporation with how, like, yeah, they're not people, they're property, they would just, yeah, get rid of the bodies, burn the bodies, do something other than what you did. And maybe, I don't know, maybe they did cremate them, and, like, the little plots were just because the lady was sentimental. I'm trying to look up her name because I'm not going to keep calling her the lady. Man, this show had so much promise, and it disappointed me so much. And then again, they built up this rivalry between Wendy and Curly that went basically nowhere because Curly pretty much falls in line for the end of this season. You know, they all band together. And all because Dame Sylvia, that was her name. But yeah, maybe it was Dame Sylvia who decided that, like, hey, why don't we bury the children? But anyway, nonetheless, also the weird moment when, like, Alien comes face to face with her, doesn't try to bite her or, like, you know, show its teeth, gets hit with a rubber bullet, I'm pretty sure, and just darts out, doesn't try to just kill them like it did all the other ones, which, okay. And why are we putting the alien out in the daytime? For real, like, it does not look good in light. It makes it more obvious that this is a rubber suit with a person inside of it instead of a scary monster. And the big fight with Morrow and Kirsch gets his back broken. Why does his? I know synths are like the cyborg, the androids aren't necessarily super durable because I mean they. In the first movie, they like knocked off Ash's head when he was trying to like kill Sigourney Weaver's character, Ripley. But I don't understand that one right there. I mean, it was funny the way he delivered his line. He's like, "Where were you 10 minutes ago?" That was pretty good. The only saving grace of the show, or one of the big bright spots for the show for me, was definitely Timothy Oliphant. And I'm all for Boyd Cavalier having, you know, it. Absurd ego and like disregard for most people's ideas. However, we don't really get to see him do a lot of smart things. We just see him as a pompous prick who thinks he knows better, and then every decision he makes just seems to kind of fall apart. So it's like, it'd have been nice if you actually would have showed, hey, why this guy was a boy genius and one of the youngest trillionaires out there. That'd have been good to know. I hate Wendy's brother in this. He was like one of the worst bits the entire time. And the little eye octopus thing, I guess it like tried to help prevent, you know, people from getting eaten by the xenomorph and the facehugger and all that other stuff. Then, you know. Because they can't really talk, so they don't really know what's going on. That kind of was, that was a thing. It went nowhere. It went into Dame Sylvia's husband's body. And the fact that I couldn't even remember really that they were like husband and wife, and they just didn't really seem to have all that much chemistry between them. And she doesn't seem to question where the fuck her husband is throughout all this chaos. She doesn't go looking for him. She just goes to a gravesite and goes, it's growing pains. We don't get nothing to be like, oh, my husband might be dead. What's going on here? And then like the little alien octopus thing goes into its body. So how does that work? I get it. Like it controls the body of something, but like it with its tentacles and shit, but like, what's the duration of how long a dead body can be around, or you know, how long can it be dead before it's inoperable? Is it like it just can do anything as long as it gets into an eye socket? What are we doing here? What is going on? And man, yeah, it's just that was bad. I guess it was kind of cool that the kids came together at the end, slightly. If it had been a way better story for them to realize, hey, we are a lot stronger and all this other stuff than our masters and the people in charge of us. Let's take over, like, essentially, quote-unquote, take over. That'd have been fine if this would have been a little bit better because it just seems kind of rushed. And the fact that, again, like I said before, that's that rivalry between Curly and Wendy, like, you know, we didn't do a whole lot with that. I kind of thought in the beginning that Curly was going to start sabotaging Wendy in certain cases, or like she would rat her out to the higher ups about what's going on. And the fact that they have these trackers, like, oh, somebody turned off the trackers. Why can't you turn it back on? Why does Arthur have access to the trackers after you fired him? Why does he have any sort of access to anything after you fired him? You would think you would have canceled his clearances before you went and told them, hey, you're fired. Get out of here. But you didn't. And, man, this show. I'm so confused by this show. And it, like I said, it doesn't end like a season finale. It ends like we're on a, like, we're just waiting for next week to show up before shit really hits the fan and the Xenomorph does what the Xenomorph does, maybe or maybe not. Like, we saw the Weyland-Yutani people showing up to the island. Fucking great with that. And, like, knowing Noah Hawley and how long it takes to make sequels, it's probably going to be another, like, 4 years before we get Alien 2. I mean, Fargo has been around for 11 years, only had its 5 seasons. Legion was consistent, but, you know, other than that, there is no talk of a second season. There's been no announcement of a second season. I know I've seen in interviews where Noah Hawley has said, oh yeah, I've written it like as if we're having 2 seasons. And that's what FX kind of told me, but there's not been real official announcement. And I've read that the ratings have dipped since the beginning of the season. So we that might all be for vain, I guess. And this might just be the end of with a weird cliffhanger. And then what does this mean for the rest of the Alien franchise? Does Prodigy, I mean, technically still exist throughout the Ripley era and all that other stuff and into future installments? What are we going to do with that? What are we going to do with Wendy? Is it just going to be like a loose plot thread like the David stuff? And then again, don't get me started on the fact that Ridley Scott wants to continue on with that side of the prequels. Like, I swear to God, he better not. Disney or Fox, whoever is in charge, better not. And also, how does Wendy have the ability to communicate with the fucking aliens? Why, what about her synth brain? I know that she can, like, sift through computers in an instant and all that other stuff, and they're really smart, but, like, come on. What is with that? Are we going to get answers for that next season? We better get something, I guess. Because, again, like, she just feels like a fucking X-Men mutant. Like, just all these superpowers for no other reason than just because. And when, you know, Boy Cavalier is trying to escape, he just, you know, hopscotching his way out, being like, hey, get my ship ready, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, man. And then, I don't know, as much as I like Timothy Oliphant in this show, I'm very perplexed by the, he seems to be working against his makers with allowing, well, not telling the fact that Isaac, you know, got his face ripped off and other stuff, and that nothing's going wrong in the lab, but then, like, he mentions it later, and then he's antagonistic towards the kids, but then he works with the kids and all this stuff. I don't know, man. All the motivations are just blah. It's just, they're not clear. They're all over the place. Boy Cavalier, again, doesn't show any intelligence at all. And that's frustrating. And I get you're only as smart as the people who are writing you. But, like, you would think with a writer's room, you take a little time to be like, okay, how could we get to point A to point B with all this and make him not look completely inept? Because if you know that you don't know what these creatures are capable of, but you're going to bring them into the containment and hope for the best with what you got. Not to mention the fact that this, you know, scientist on the board of the Maginot is just working and eating around these fucking things without any, you know, proper wear or thinking, maybe I should leave my open water of container in here or even bring it in here because I don't know what these things are capable of, or just be more aware. I don't, like, what are we doing, guys? This franchise was taking a couple of steps forward. You know, we had Alien Isolation. We had Alien Romulus. We have the Predator series getting back on track, and they've teased alien involvement. And this show has, you know, taken a fucking nosedive. It's still probably better than Prometheus and Covenant, if I'm going to be honest with you. Even though I really haven't seen Covenant, but I, for what I've seen, for the clips I've seen of it and what I know of the story without seeing the movie, yeah. But yeah, the show has been very frustrating, and again, started off with so much promise. I was intrigued with the mystery of what we had going on at first and where it could possibly lead, and how the brother, you know, finding out his sister's alive in quotations, or maybe we'd have the moral conundrum of, okay, are they really the kids? Is it like the what they think is the consciousness of the kids? And like, there's so much stuff you could have played with that, and we didn't get anything and no answers. So big thumbs down with that. On the other, on the twist, on the other opposite end of the spectrum here, Peacemaker season 2 is chugging along great, and I've watched the episodes 6 and 7. They were fantastic, and the big reveal in at the end of episode 6 was tremendous, because, you know, Chris, his perfect alternate world where everything's so much better, his brother's alive, his dad isn't a prick, turns out to be a world where the Nazis won World War II, and that's why you don't see any white people, or not white people, not any, you know, minorities around, and that you only see white people. And the big old twist, even further with that, is that, you know, Augie, the blue dragon, white dragon, or whatever, I forgot his name, the alternate world, but, you know, John Cena's dad, Peacemaker's dad, was not a racist in this version, or in this world, potentially, it seems like, with the way he spoke about how, like, you know, I can only fight the monsters that I see in front of me, I can't fix all the ills of the world, and he got really upset when he was called a Nazi, which, I mean, I know, you know, generally some Nazis will get very upset with the fact they're being called one, but, you know, yeah, fine, great. And John Cena's acting, whoa, buddy, you know, out of all the wrestlers turned actors, we've had the Hogans, the Pipers, the Venturas, and all that. I'm impressed with John Cena. John Cena showed some real chops, like the almost reverting to a childlike state when he's watching his crew, you know, beat up on his brother, potentially killing him. The way he yells stop was so gut-wrenching to me. Like, it got me. It was like, damn, bro. Like, that was really good. And, you know, he's like, it's me. I'm the problem. It doesn't matter the dimension. It's me. I'm the issue and all of this. No matter what version I am, everything's, you know, screwed up. And Harcourt was going to, like, shoot his brother because she's, well, that was her leaving, being like, sorry, I can't have you coming after your, I can't have you coming after him. And I get it. I get her point, you know, because he was very upset the fact that Chris killed their version of Chris. You know, Augie was like, hey, I love him. But he was a troublemaker. He was on all booze and he was extremely violent. And I believe this guy when he says that he didn't mean to kill him. So, you know, I guess a little bit of forgiveness there. That was cool. So that was the big, you know, the big reveal for him. But yeah, watching I forgot her name, but watching the Adebayo get chased down the street at the end of episode 6 was wild. And I've read that James Gunn cleared it with her before, you know, hey, this is where we're going, are you cool with this? And she was game for it. I mean, the show's got more of a comedy bent to it anyway, but, you know, the fact that Judo Master helped her out, that was cool. Yeah, so what else about it? But yeah, no, that show's fine. All Sinners, and next week's going to be the finale. And it's one of the better shows I've watched. I've loved it. I love season 1. Again, this is now in the DCU. Frank Grillo has done an amazing job as Rick Flag Sr. and on his quest to get revenge for the death of his son and how it's more of a personal vendetta. He tries to make it seem like he's doing it for the betterment of mankind, with the fact that he's after the portal and all that too, and like they're trying to prevent anything like what happened, the events of Superman, to happen again. And Lex Luthor showed up. That was pretty cool. Wasn't expecting him to show up, but that plants some seeds, I guess, for the Man of Tomorrow and what's to come in the DCU. So big thumbs up on all of that. Like, John Cena is superb as Peacemaker. I love it. I love, and like, it's interesting, like, you know, you get more of the man behind underneath the costume, which in superhero movies and shows, you don't really get a whole lot of that. I mean, it's superficial in a sense where you get underneath that, but like, you just see this man dealing with all this trauma in his life, and the failures are his mistakes, and how he's trying to redeem himself from that and be more and what he thinks he's, or what he wants to be, in a sense, the hero that he thought he was, you know. Good stuff. I can't wait to talk about the rest of it. And, you know, though Robert Patrick was making his speech, I was like, oh, man, shit's going to hit the fan soon. What's going to happen? Somebody going to come flying in. What's going to happen here? And then when Vigilante, you know, leaps through the window and starts stabbing him in the neck, The way the music swelled, though, I was like, yeah, something bad's about to happen. But the fact that it happened was, you know, brutal. And then even worse when he finds out, when Chris finds out his dad's not a racist in this universe, possibly. And, you know, just dealing with all that. It was really good. Really good stuff there. But on we go. There is going to be a movie coming out from MGM Studios called I Play Rocky. And it will be about the behind-the-scenes story of Sylvester Stallone writing Rocky and fighting to be the main actor and playing the character of Rocky. And they've casted Stephen James, who's been in If Beale Street Could Talk and Homecoming. He's going to be playing Carl Weathers. Peter Farrelly is directing. Anthony Ippolito is going to play young Sylvester Stallone. I'm all for it. That could be fun. You know, the behind the scenes story is very interesting of how, like, you know, he was so broke, and like in order to like make ends meet and stuff, he had to sell his dog. And then once Rocky came out, he went back to that same liquor store and tracked down the guy who he sold the dog to get him back and to pay him off. I hope that's in the movie. That'd be pretty interesting. But that sounds like a lot of fun. I can't wait. Very intrigued in how that'll play out. You know, it's the story itself is fascinating. Rocky is a beloved franchise, one of my favorite movie franchises of all time. Creed is a fun one too. So look forward to seeing more on that. But also, let's backtrack a little bit. I've said before, we stop reboots, and you know, we're getting reboots again and again. Well, the big casting rumor, and last week I spoke about Miami Vice. Well, Miami Vice has some interesting names attached to play Tubbs and Crockett. And two of the big names circling around this reboot of Michael Mann's produced television series, Michael B. Jordan and Glenn Powell. You know, Glenn Powell, obviously, it was in, I think it was in F1. I should probably double check that before I start spouting off about him. But Michael B. Jordan, you know, Creed franchise, stuff like that. He's very successful. I mean, he's been in obviously a bunch of other stuff. But Glenn Powell, you know, he's going to be the running man. He's in Top Gun Maverick, Twisters. He's got his name out there. He's got a bit of buzz around him. Chad Powers is out right now. Apparently, that's a popular show. I haven't watched it. I think it's on Apple TV, and I don't have Apple TV anymore. There's too many streaming services, man. Streaming services, to be honest, is a new cable. But yeah, Michael B. Jordan, I've said Creed, Sinners, Black Panther, you know, he's made some solid movies in the last couple of years, Sinners being the most recent. But yeah, that'd be a fun two to have play your Tubbs and Crockett in your Miami Vice reboot. Could be a lot of fun. Continuing on with the reboots and all that stuff, you know, it was reported that Henry Cavill got injured not too long ago. So that put production, that put a little bit of that on hold. They're not in production yet, but they're in pre-production. But Henry Cavill showed a new image on his Instagram, him working out in a boot, doing some upper body exercises with the caption "Endure and enduring, grow strong." So even despite his leg injury, putting the shooting schedule on hold, you know, he's still trying to get that work in. You know, he's going to be playing Connor McCloud. And another fun little interesting tidbit about this Highlander reboot is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre is joining the cast of this film, playing, I've read somewhere, the brother of Connor McCloud. So that'll be interesting. Drew McIntyre hasn't been in movies before, but you know, his promo work, especially on the indies and stuff, I was very familiar with and compelled by. So if he can channel that into acting, who knows, man, he might be good at it. But I'm sure we're going to get a lot of fight scenes from him. Maybe he's going to pass away, you know, being a driving force for our Highlander here, because there can only be one, right? All right, but I looked up. I stand corrected. He's been in some stuff. I think he was in a short called The Cursed. I haven't seen it. I don't know if that's an actual reality show. Let me not speak ahead of time, but... Oh, no, okay, no. It was a TV show. So, legit TV show, not just some sort of, you know, fan-made or short thing. But it looks like a slow, small-budget thing. Nonetheless, it's his first big major movie. So, good for him. You know, I know that TKO, Endeavor, they were a talent agency or, like, people with like who worked in that sort of department. So, good for him. Can't wait to see it. I got a soft spot for Highlander. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. It's not necessarily the best movie in the world, but hey, it's a lot of fun. And in some fun X-Men news in the MCU, the potential villains in the next phase, like after phase six, excuse me, the potential after all of that, when all that wraps up, they are looking at the possibility of the next saga villains being Mr. Sinister and Apocalypse. Now, Daniel Richmond, apparently he is a Marvel insider, and he posted this on his Patreon this past week. So, you know, these are rumors, though, so take it with a grain of salt, if you will. But I guess with this guy being an insider, he gets a lot of scoops and possibly... Turned out to be right, but hey, you know, I ain't mad at it, Mr. Sinister. Let's go. On Apocalypse had a terrible outing in the movie with Oscar Isaac and how he was, you know, made fun of for looking pretty much like Ivan Ooze. And Ryan Reynolds, it might involve Ryan Reynolds in a sense. It could, you know, be teased in the Wolverine Deadpool spinoff, or maybe not. Maybe he makes up his other, maybe the, like, you know, the X-Force or another mutant team up. Who's to say? Because there's a lot of speculation on what Ryan Reynolds is going to do with all that, because it seems like he's got a little bit of creative freedom when it comes to Deadpool and what he wants to do in that regard. So time will tell. Could be little fun tidbits there. And phase six of Marvel's television series have been announced. Obviously, like we said last week, Daredevil season 3 is already confirmed. Season 2 of Born Again is supposed to hit Disney Plus at the beginning of next year. So that'll be cool. Eyes of Wakanda has already come out. You know, Marvel Zombies is out too. I got to start watching that. Somebody asked me if I've watched it yet. Have not. But yeah, early 2026, Daredevil Born Again's coming out. Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, X-Men 97, season 2 is coming back. It's said to be a lot darker than the first season. Hopefully it continues its momentum. The showrunner was fired for, you know, miscellaneous conduct that I don't feel like getting into. It's deplorable if it's true, but look it up. There's a whole big spectacle, but, you know, he's been off the show. So it'll be interesting to see how the new showrunner picks up and if they continue on the momentum. And there's going to be a WandaVision follow-up called Vision Quest coming too. So, hey, that'll be a lot of fun. Maybe we'll see the Scarlet Witch show up back again. But Wonder Man is going to be starring Yahya Abdul-Mateen II as Simon Williams, a.k.a. Wonder Man. There's a still image. I don't know if it's actually from this or if this is from some other movie. Not going to lie, I thought it was Mahershala Ali. And just, you know, wearing a headpiece, and it was announcing subtly that Blade's coming around and he's incognito fighting. But the sooner, like, we'll get Blade as soon as the Angels win the pennant, right? But, you know, some fun stuff. But yeah, Wonder Man will star Yahya Abdul-Ali as well as Ed Harris as Simon's agent, Neil Sorayan, as another person. And somebody else, Arian Mohade, easy for me to say, as Damage Control Agent P. Cleary, and Demetrius Gross as Simon's supervillain brother, Eric Williams, a.k.a. the Grim Reaper. So, okay, the still I saw it was actually, you know, Wonder Man still, and that's going to be coming out in July of next year. Oh, actually, JK, Wonder Man will be released December of this year. Sorry about that. I'm a broadcast journalist who's not doing his job very well right now, it seems. But backtracking to, you know, reboots, this one I don't think needs to be needed at all. I don't know who was asking for this. I don't know why you'd be asking for this. It was a product of its time. It needs no reboot, sequel, spiritual sequel, none of that stuff. Baywatch. Yes, the 90s syndicated phenomenon is getting a fucking reboot. And it's going to be all the stuff that made Baywatch popular in the modern trappings. Well, good for you guys, I guess. Maybe we'll have some lady have an overdramatic, you know, cancer scare like we did in the Bash at the Beach episode. I don't know why. Like, why? But again, this doesn't need to happen. Not at all. But Matt Nix, who was the Burn Notice and CBS True Lies showrunner, will be the showrunner of this series. You know, along with executive producers of the original Baywatch series, Michael Burke, Greg Bonin, and Doug Schwartz, as well as Dante DiLoretto. Yeah, good for you guys. You're I don't understand, man. We don't need it. Like, it's about as needed as Baywatch Nights, where David Hasselhoff's Mitch Buchanan opens a detective agency and then starts fighting, like, wizards and cyborgs and demons or whatever the fuck was going on in that show, because I know it got pretty wacky, and I've seen some episodes here and there. But, yeah, Fox brought it back. Fox aired another Lifeguard series called Rescue High Surf last year, and it was canceled in May. So I guess, you know, if we can't get a knockoff to go well, let's get the original, brother. Let's bring that back, dude. I don't know why I became Hulk Hogan in this. I mean, he was in an episode, but, oh, man. Stop. Please. No. And when it gets canceled, I'm going to show you my surprise face. I will post a picture with my very, you know, nuanced and surprised face. Moving on, though, as I said earlier, there was some news about a, you know, miniseries coming out later this year from Spawn, and it's gonna involve Santa Claus, and the story will also have, you know, the famous detectives from that series, Sam and Twitch. It's gonna be uncovering a bizarre homicide on Christmas Eve. And Santa Claus is going to be involved. I mean, hey, if we got, you know, Satan and God being the children of Mother Nature or whatever, and then, like, it's this whole big thing, cool. I guess Santa Claus is going to be real in this. I don't know if they're going to do it like that or if they're just going to have somebody dressed Santa. I don't know. But it's just wild. What a wild thing. Why? And the fact that they're doing, like, a holiday special of Christmas with Spawn of all the characters? I don't know, man. You know, I mean, cool, I guess. The writer and artist on this, or the co-writers, excuse me, Chris Killian and Andrew Sanders, they've said they were big fans of holiday specials growing up, especially the Halloween and Christmas variety. And they said it felt like Spawn was overdue for a Christmas type event, especially with all the nods to Christmas and some of the Spawn toy lines over the years, like Santa Spawn or the Twisted Christmas line. It was kind of wild to think this insanely supernatural Spawn universe Santa Claus had never really been confirmed as existing, even though he's been hinted at in various ways. Even when I brought the idea to Todd, my first question was, does Santa Claus exist in the Spawn world? And Todd was sort of just confused by the question and said, I guess he could be. Why do you ask? So, wild. I may end up reading it when it's all collected because I ain't going month to month on that one. I don't know if you could. It might be a one-shot. I probably should. No, it's one. Okay, so it's two issues. So one's first one's come out in November, second one. So I might just get the two issues and just call it a day, or I might just wait till it's in a book form. I don't fucking know. It'll be a spur of the moment decision, but that's just funny to me, that news. It's just fucking Spawn hanging out with Santa Claus. No big deal. And this headline from the Hollywood Reporter just tickled me to death. Sorry for the poor turn of phrase on that one, but I'll read you the quote, or I'll read you the headline, rather. Ron Friedman, screenwriter who killed off Optimus Prime, dies at 93. Now, that's wild for a man's, like, you know, death headline. I can't call it an obituary, but, like, you know, I would report a reporting this man's dead by just saying, yeah, he's the asshole that killed Optimus Prime. Fuck him. I don't know if they're saying it like that, but it's just funny. That's the headline. It just made me kind of laugh because it's like, wow, that's kind of, geez, that's where we're going with? I mean, yeah, it's true. This is one of his, I guess, famous creative decisions. He's one of the people who created the backstory for G.I. Joe and helped rejuvenate it back in the day to be a juggernaut on television in the 80s. He was also written for such shows as Get Smart, The Andy Griffith Show, Bewitched, The Odd Couple, Gilligan's Island, I Dream Genie, The Partridge Family, Barney Miller, Happy Days, All in the Family, Wonder Woman, Sledgehammer, The Fall Guy, and the new XKRP in Cincinnati. So this man has quite the resume, quite the career to him. Rest in peace to you, sir. And how could you kill Optimus Prime? Like, what a headline, man. Just freaking bizarre. But in the news of professional wrestlers getting their own biopic, you know, obviously there was one in the works a long time ago, I mean, a couple of years ago, about Hulk Hogan that never got off the ground. Chris Hemsworth was attached to play Hulk Hogan. So I don't know what happened with all that. Maybe it was like the fact that they want to tell the real story and, nah, dude, we're gonna get the Hulk Hogan story, brother. The way Hogan tells it, dude. I don't know with that. But all that alum and SNL cast member Kenan Thompson and Johnny Ryan Jr. are developing a biopic on the late, great Macho Man Randy Savage, with a script completed by Savage's brother, the genius Lanny Poffo, who is also deceased at this time, and Eric at this time, as if he can come back. Sorry, that's just me talking sometimes, man. I just say the most ridiculous things there. But yeah, he wrote a script with Eric Shapiro, and Thompson is going to be producing it along with Midas Touch Entertainment, Paul Coy Allen. But Thompson and Ryan Jr. are both longtime fans of Macho Man Randy Savage. Thompson actually worked with Savage during his Nickelodeon days in 1999. I guess he might have probably been an episode of Kenan and Kel by that point. But yeah, so they want to bring him to the big screen. And Ryan Jr. had this to say in a statement. Macho Man Randy Savage was the greatest showman of all time and the OG bad boy of entertainment. His outfits were as electric as his personality and so much more than an artist. He's an icon. Lanny and Eric did a great job capturing the story in the crazy 80s wrestling era that turned wrestling figures into lifelong pop culture icons. Thompson said, beyond excited for this one, Macho Man is hands down one of the greatest of all time. Can't wait to bring his story to the big screen. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Macho Man does have a crazy life. His dad, Angelo Poffo, was a professional wrestler. He played, you know, minor league baseball and, like, had to switch arms when, like, he got an injury because he didn't know if he was going to be able to perform, I guess, up to snuff or... But I know he trained his other arm when, like, he got hurt, so, like, he could still go or he could transition, worked really hard on that, you know. So that'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully it gets made. You know, it'd be interesting to see who they would cast to be Macho Man Randy Savage, because that dude has got, like, the voice. I don't, you know, it's the voice is a big thing because it went along with the mannerisms. Yeah, and I went all of that. And they even said that a lot of, like, Diamond Dallas Page said that was Macho Man 24/7. That's just the way he talked, brother. I don't know why I slipped in. I mean, he said brother too, but, you know, that'll be interesting. And, you know, again, okay, so follow up to the article dives into the fact that Netflix was developing a Hulk Hogan biopic. Chris Hemsworth attached to play Hulk Hogan himself. Todd Phillips was going to be the writer. And based on the script by Scott Silver, Hogan said the script was very, very dark. And the reason it fell apart in 2024 was because contract issues and around a mispayment. So that was why we didn't get that dude. But that was the words according to Hulk Hogan, brother, because he said this. It kind of messed up a beat in the contract. Yeah. I don't know why I said yeah. It's like Macho Man because I'm talking. Yeah, but he said there was a payment that wasn't placed at the right time. The script was amazing. Scott Silver, who wrote The Joker for Joker, Wolf of Wall Street, a bunch of other movies, said, this is the best thing I've ever written. When I read it, I'm like, oh my God, this is really good. At the time, I was in a space where I told him the positive stuff about wrestling. Spent about 3 years with this writer going back and forth. And when I read it, it was just very, very dark. And if that would be the right word, but it was probably what the public may want to see. When I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, if this thing comes out, there's talks that Chris Hemsworth would never play a real person before and he could probably win an Oscar. This thing is so powerful. Yeah, okay. Chris Hemsworth winning an Oscar for playing Hulk Hogan. Right. But anyway, back to the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Yeah, that's my piss poor impression of Randy Savage. I'll probably get a really mean spirited or not mean, just disappointed, you know, tweet from my coach Jay Lethal on that one, because he does a really good one. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see who they cast for the Macho Man, because that's a man you can't duplicate, and he's got that, you know, he's got that big larger than life personality that you just was like, man, this would be a caricature in a movie. So cool with that. I can't wait. Hopefully it gets further in development than the Hogan script, dude. But yeah, that'll be funny. Maybe Hemsworth can make a cameo as Hulk Hogan in this one. Lust in his eyes for Elizabeth. That'll be fun. Also, to end this with a little bit from our watch along of 10 Things I Hate About You. There was a planned sequel for 10 Things I Hate About You, and it was going to be called 10 Things I Hate About Life. And it was supposed to come out. It was being filmed in 2012. It would have followed the characters Willow and Ben, two people determined in their own lives who meet each other while staging their deaths by a scenic cliff with a dark premise. The pair decide to postpone their suicide plans as they gradually fall for one another and discover the reason to live. Evan Rachel Wood was going to be playing Willow. Thomas McDonald was going to be playing Ben. Apparently it was in production, and then it just, you know, it's got halted because of a myriad of management issues, behind the scenes problems that it had to halt. Cause I think they said they went through like a couple of different people of management with the production and all of that. And, Evan Rachel Wood got pregnant, so that got put on hold. And then she dropped out later on because they were going to resume filming somewhere in 2013 or 2014. And I think it says here, yeah, as she was getting sued or whatever, there was a possibility of it. And the lawyers claimed that she was never properly paid by the company, which the producers claimed she had a breach in her contract. So this actually led to a $30 million lawsuit against Wood that has kept the film wrapped up in legal issues ever since. And to that I say, in a sense, well, I'm glad we didn't get the sequel, because I'm sure it'd have been like, well, it's not as good as the original. And even then, the original was based off of a Shakespearean play. But I like the idea of 10 Things I Hate About Life, 10 Things About Dating, 10 Things I Hate About Marriage, because they're talking about other stuff like that, and it'd be like the trilogy of 10. So cool for them. Apparently there's still also talks about rebooting that and continuing on with like that sort of premise. I don't know who's to say. Maybe they'll reboot 10 Things I Hate About You and then spawn that off with the pitches that me and Caden Green made last week on the show. If you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. But on that note, I have been JC Vega. You can follow me at the JC Vega on all the social media platforms. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com. Get yourself a Vegas World t-shirt. Get yourself a JC Vega t-shirt. One says punk rock. The other says Rainbow Dash. And also, you can find Vegas World on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, Vegas World Pod. Go to the YouTube channel, Vegas World. Subscribe. I have a video on Superman up there, as well as a video on the Street Fighter casting with some other throwbacks from Vegas World podcast itself. A future video about 1997 Drive starring Mark Dacascos will be coming out very, very soon, working on that, as well as a retrospective on Orphan Black. So with that, good night and party on.